everybody, and welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us. My name is Door-to-Door Geek, a.k.a. Steve McLaughlin, the owner administrator of podnuts.com. I am Cody-less this evening and no other guest. Cody is starting his holiday run at work, so he is very busy, and I just felt like we needed to put at least something out this week. Once again this week, OBS is working with YouTube live events, so if you were, please partake in the video, youtube.com/door-to-door-geek. When I trim the beginning and end, I will upload it to youtube.com/podnuts. If you can, just take a peek at the video, couple minutes here. Let me know what you think about the video. Is this a worthwhile endeavor that I should keep doing or not? Okay, I also want to mention the Linux for the Rest of Us Club. All the Podnuts newsletters are going to go through a little bit of a shift and a little bit of a change. I was using GetResponse for all newsletters, very lackluster customer support, so I'm changing it over. Thanks to Martin Obando, I'm switching over to a service called SendGrid. So as soon as I have that completely sent, figured out, everyone will receive a newsletter just letting them know that it is changed. I also want to thank Chris again for coming out to Linux for the Rest of Us episode 190 from thinkpenguin.com. Chris wants to remind everybody, please do not forget savewifi.org, savewifi.org, and savewifi.org. Post it, share it, tweet it, Facebook it, Google Plus it, let people at work know about it. If you go to any lugs or any maker spaces or know any hams, make sure they know about it as well. And I will ask you, do not forget that when you need yourself some open, friendly hardware, go to thinkpenguin.com, find something that you like. Please do not hesitate to let us know, and I will give you a coupon code. I'm getting better with my email. I'm still periodically falling quite behind. Let's get to some links. Okay, first link I wanted to bring up, it's actually because this is, to me, a sign of big things happening in the future. Okay, America used to be the land where innovation happened, where manufacturing happened at a great deal. That has since shifted outside the U.S. One of the countries right now picking up a lot of momentum and a lot of popularity because of how much things going on in their country is India. Now, I will say, not sarcastically, like a bunch of you out there, I work with a couple guys at least from India. They all seem to be, in my humble opinion, some of the better people I've ever worked with. All very nice guys, mostly hardworking, and I mean very hardworking guys. They put me to shame. So whenever I see things about India, I always try to go talk to them about it. So I did see this article. This was over at storypick.com, and it's talking about a new Linux distribution called BOSS, B-O-S-S, which stands for Bharat Operating System Solutions, which I'm sure I'm mispronouncing. This is a Indian government-sponsored Linux distribution that they're looking at launching to replace at least some Microsoft Windows desktops. How many is very unclear, I will say that. This, to me, is a big sign of things to come. Entire countries now are starting to look at using alternate desktops, quote-unquote, just to save a lot of price and to save a lot of control and ownership. In the beginning of computing, a lot of countries, a lot of people, a lot of organizations did not want to accept the responsibility it took to truly manage all your desktops. So we handed a lot of that off to Microsoft. Then we got accustomed to their tools. A lot's changed. Now it's become a lot more reasonable for people to take a custom Linux distribution, tweak it, add stuff to it, suit it to their own personal needs, and now we're going to have countries start doing this more and more often. I will say, India to do this is a very big endeavor. We've all heard about the Munich, Germany thing that's happened. Brazil has pushed a lot with the open source. To me, this is a really big one because this is an entire country talking about basically doing it themselves. I'm sure China's done it to some degree, and I'm sure certain parts of the NSA, for instance, I know for a fact, use Linux as their desktop. But this is really big because of the sheer number of people in India. The couple people at my job who do know about Linux told me that they all thought this was pretty cool. This could be a big difference maker. They're developers, so they hearken back to the fact that the .NET Core is now open sourced, and now there is at least some editor that is cross-platform. They think this is a big sign of things to come for the future, and it's going to allow them to, they think, start up businesses at a lot less of a cost. Now, mirroring that article, we have another one, not quite as potent, I will say. This isn't about a country going the way of Linux, but the UK government is starting to initiate and starting to formalize support for open document formats. Open document format support, to me, is a big, huge step in morality or ethics, if you will, of how a country wants to handle its data. So for the UK to push backing ODF as being their official document standard, and ODF being the open document format, this to me speaks a lot of volumes. What I honestly feel like, the more countries that do this, the more it's going to pressure Microsoft into having better support for ODF, which will make it much more possible for people to run LibreOffice, OpenOffice, or Microsoft Office and have all the documents be truly, seamlessly cross-platform functional. Right now, we have a lot of people out there who like to say, you can open up any Word or Office document with LibreOffice and it works just fine. That's not the complete truth. And sometimes the issue isn't with you opening it up in a open source editor, but you then saving it and giving it back to somebody in Microsoft Office. Sometimes that's where the issues come about. So to support open document formats, to me, is another huge step in the right direction of trying to get these countries, these organizations, and these institutions to support open source, open formatting, open formats. Okay, this next link, okay, there's a lot to this one in the sense of there's a lot in my head. Okay, I always talk about microcomputers, Raspberry Pis, but if you listen to the show, I also force the banana pie a lot. The Raspberry Pi is the Ubuntu of microcomputers, which means it's the easiest to get, it's the easiest to set up, it's the most trouble-free one to get whatever you want up and running on it. That doesn't mean it's the best, okay? It's the best for certain people. It's the best for certain needs. It's the best for certain job tasks. But over here on htpcguides.com, HTPC Home Theater PCs. This is basically a realm of computing where they want as small as possible, fanless if possible, computers that just act as front ends to stream or catch content and to either put them on a audio stream or a video stream like a radio or a TV. Okay, over at this website, htpcguides.com, they did, in my opinion, a pretty thorough benchmark. Okay, this is the Raspberry Pi versus the Raspberry Pi 2 versus the Banana Pi Pro. Okay, Banana Pi Pro is essentially the Raspberry Pi 2. Okay, now they have four of these here. I'm sorry, Raspberry Pi, Raspberry Pi 2, Banana Pi, and the Banana Pi Pro. Okay, just looking at some of the stats, they look a lot even. Okay, Raspberry Pi 2, 900 megahertz quad core ARM v7, Banana Pi Pro, 1 gigahertz ARM v7 dual core. Right there, the Raspberry Pi does sound better because there's four cores. RAM, even, 1 gig versus 1 gig, the Pi 2 versus the Pro. RAM bus, 450 megahertz for the Raspberry Pi 2, 432 megahertz for the Banana Pi Pro. Okay, advantage, obviously, Pi 2. The network connector, here's where stats get a little bit hidden, I'll say. The Raspberry Pi 2 has a 100 megabit network connector, and the Banana Pi Pro has a gigabit connector, okay? 10 times faster. Yeah, 10 times faster. But in reality, the Raspberry Pi 2 network and USB bus is on the same chip, which means if you have a lot of activity in the USB, it's going to affect your networking. So actually the networking, I would say, is much less than 100 megabits in my personal experience. And the Banana Pi Pro does have two separate buses, one for the USB, one for the network. That gives much more cleaner performance when you actually hit something with a lot of load, okay? USB ports, Raspberry Pi 2, four of them. Banana Pi Pro 2, obvious advantage again, Raspberry Pi. SATA, Raspberry Pi 2, nothing. Banana Pi Pro, yes. Raspberry Pi, it says $35. In reality, you can get a full case and a full setup for around $50. Banana Pi Pro, it says $45. That seems a little bit low. To me, it's typically closer to $50 with a full case and the whole setup. You're also talking about $70. So it's considerably more price for the Banana Pi Pro. But there is a couple of things in this first stat that aren't mentioned. The Banana Pi Pro built in wireless. That means something. It's built onto the chip, which means it's going to work a lot better. It's all open hardware, which means it's going to work fairly easy, and it also means you don't have to spend more money to get Wi-Fi on your board, okay? But in general, the Raspberry Pi 2 almost wins just looking at these stats. But if you scroll down through this page and you look at the numbers, thankfully, all you have to do is read the paragraphs and the bullet points where they have bold in them, because that's highlighting the direct board-to-board comparison. And I'm very happy to say the Banana Pi Pro either competes good, it doesn't beat, or meets or destroys the Raspberry Pi 2 on more than half of these. Okay, on more than half of these, it either ties or destroys. And most of the time when it doesn't beat it, it's hovering right around it. It isn't falling too far beneath it. But of course, when you get to stuff like the network, that's where the Raspberry cannot even come close to competing, okay? It also has a SATA connector. Both of these things make the idea of HTPC very desirable, because you know you're going to get better throughput. You don't want something to be a hard bottleneck on your board. And with the Banana, since you have built-on wireless, if you want, you have gigabit Ethernet, you have a real SATA port, you get a lot less bottlenecks, in my experience. The only place where the Raspberry Pi basically destroys the Banana Pi Pro is when you get into the higher end video output, and that's because the Raspberry Pi has a closed source video chipset. Okay, it's going to be a while before the Banana Pro truly can dominate the video processor on that Raspberry Pi 2. Because it's open source, basically a lot of people are going to do a lot of work on it to get it up to those closed source standards. But when you just want everything else to perform well, you want everything else to perform smooth, you want something solid, you don't want to have to buy a lot of extra hardware. If you hook up a external drive to a Raspberry Pi, you're going to get pretty slow speeds. SATA on the Banana Pro destroys it. If you require any network speed whatsoever, you have to go Banana Pro. To go Raspberry Pi, you're going to see very bad performance. So I always encourage people, you don't get the Raspberry Pi 2, but instead get the Banana Pro, because of one big also reason. You're going to have to do just a touch more work, but trust me when I say this, you will learn something. If you just want something to work out of the box with zero effort, or as close to zero effort as possible, get the Raspberry Pi. But I encourage people, take it further, do a little bit more, and get yourself a Banana Pro, okay? I'm still going to talk about the Raspberry Pi because it's a really good device, and I do want to get these microcomputers as much publicity as possible, okay? Next, this article is definitely a link bait headline. It's from Make Use Of, 5 Lies Linux Haters Like to Tell. Okay, first off, there are plenty of Linux haters out there. There are plenty of Windows haters. There are plenty of Mac haters. All three of them are guilty of manipulating old truths or stereotypes, or just bending truths or stereotypes. But the people who are if you will, say, evangelical about Linux, Mac, or Windows, do the exact same kind of things, just in a positive way. I have no problem saying I really am quite upset whenever I have to use Windows now. Again, I've never used a Mac because they're not really that popular. Why should I? And I am a little bit overly nice to Linux. I got no problem admitting that, and I will admit that. But here on this article, 5 lies Linux haters like to tell. There is some truth to this, because I've heard it myself, but it mostly is, I think, people's old beliefs about Linux. Lie number 1, Linux is too difficult. Saying Linux is too difficult or easy is a lie, because it doesn't matter. It matters what are you trying to do with the distribution, which distribution did you select, and how much work are you willing to learn the basics. If you're not willing to put any work into to learn the basics, and you try to run Gentoo, Linux will be too difficult. If you put a little bit of time, a little bit of effort in, and you pick Ubuntu or Linux Mint, it's not going to be too difficult. It's going to actually be kind of easy to get a lot of things done. So lie number 1, it's a little bit of a stretch, I'm going to say. Lie number 2, Linux is old and ugly. Depends on what you pick. If you pick CentOS Desktop, it's, I believe, still running GNOME 2. It looks kind of dated. I don't want to say ugly, but it definitely looks dated. Yes, if you pick a more modern desktops, whether it be Fedora, Mint, Ubuntu, Elementary OS, on and on and on and on and on, they look unbelievably sharp and good. In my honest opinion, that's where Linux is pretty much on par with all the major operating systems, Mac and Windows, is the polish, the look of the desktop off of Mint, Ubuntu, OpenSUSE, all them, looks really good. Lie number 3, you must use the command line. Again, that is not a given that you will. It's not a given that you won't. It matters what you're trying to do. If you have to install stuff on Ubuntu or Mint, on a PPA, you're going to at least need to run a command, okay? If you never have to install anything from a PPA and you run a Ubuntu-based distribution, no, you don't ever have to, quote-unquote, use the command line. But I'm also sure there's going to be something sooner or later where you're going to have to pull up a command prompt and type something. But here's the whole thing. Who really cares? Because on Windows, there are still things you have to do on the command line. You have no other choice but to run a command line. If you're doing certain fixes to Microsoft Exchange, you have to drop to a command shell. If you want to simply do a ping, if you want to do any kind of NBT stat, any kind of trace route over your network, you have to drop to the command line. So this one, even mentioning it to me, is just annoying, okay? Lie number 4, you must build from source. Whoever thought that or thinks that or says that, I would like to hear them say that, because I can't believe anybody would still say that. Lie number 5, Linux can't play video games. Now, you and me both knew this one was coming, because this has been the long, painful spot for Linux users for a very long time. I mean, we could play TuxCart, you know, not much more than that, and that's just the way it was. Thankfully, things are finally starting to change. They haven't changed yet. They have gotten a hell of a lot better, but they haven't completely changed yet, but they've gotten good. Thankfully to the SteamOS, hopefully things are actually going to just keep getting better and better and better. Okay, what I got next here is a quickie. This is from Xmoodle, Xmoodulo. Okay, this is a great, perfect, super low-end, dare I say, netbook, Richard. If someone out there still has a netbook, first off, ask them why they have a netbook. But if they want to use this on a netbook or, of course, on a Pi-type device, this will be a great use for and use virtually no processor cycles up. You can get a weather forecast on the command line, but it actually does have like little graphics to go with it and color along with it as well. You can get what looks like a 3-day forecast, breaking down each day into morning, noon, evening, and night. To me, this is genius, simple, good looking. This is where you could have a extra spare monitor sitting around and just get a really low-end computer, connect it to it, and just have constantly a forecast going. Won't take much battery up, will not take much power up, will not take much processor cycle up, and you can have a nice, in my opinion, legible display, easy to read, so you can always see what the weather is going to be like. Again, that was that X Moodle, and I honestly really like that. I thought that was pretty cool. Okay, next thing I'm going to talk about here is the link over at Linux Foundation. Okay, first and foremost, I highly encourage people, never use your quote-unquote 9-to-5 business, your full-time email address. Always use a different email address whenever you have to sign up for anything. And this was not one of them. Okay. This was over at Softpedia, a listing. I don't know why I went to Softpedia. I actually went there twice this week. This is called the Linux Foundation publishes its internal workstation security checklist. I actually like this just to see what kind of things should we rate as critical, moderate, low, or even paranoid. They had four different levels. Of course, the paranoid is something you only do if you really do consider yourself paranoid. Typically, moderate and critical are all that really I think people need to worry about. Low are the things that might improve security, but they might not be worth the convenience trade-offs. This was actually pretty cool. It goes over things like, does your system support secure boot? Does it have a TPM chip? Do you have UEFI? Does it have to have a password to enter UEFI? Full disk in encryption. And this is just the basics of the hardware, and it keeps going and it keeps going and it keeps getting more and more into your browsing environment and basically your user level access. This is actually, I thought, a really interesting PDF. Highly encourage anyone at all interested in what is a standard of security and what can you do to tighten up your boxes or harden your boxes. I think this is a really, really interesting article. I'm sure you can find it at other places, not just Softpedia, but that's where I got it this go round. Okay, and this next one I'm going to bring up is also in Softpedia. This is the one, no link needed here either. Okay, good. No email address. Okay, I've seen a couple people post a couple things, and I don't understand people's brain functions. Ubuntu, okay, Mark Shuttleworth said, and really I don't care what he says, to be honest, Ubuntu will not abandon Deb packages in favor of Snappy. Anybody who thought they were, I really do question the level of sanity you have. Why would you completely forget all of the work that's already been done before you and just not use it? The people who are in technology, the industries that succeed, the companies that succeed, the technologies that succeed, anybody with any amount of knowledge and experience and foresight from the past know you do well when you stand on the shoulders of giants. You do not do well when you try to reinvent security, okay? I'm sure they have an idea of how they can use Snappy packages for some usage in Ubuntu or some use case or some environment. No doubt. Okay, of course they are going to try to innovate on top of something that's, to be quite honest, old. They're going to try to make something better. But they're not just going to completely forget about dead packages. You think they want to repackage 30 plus thousand pieces of software into Snappy packages? No. Okay, Mark Shuttleworth and Canonical are in business to make money, not to try to do things just because. So they're not going to drop dead packages. You do not have to worry about it. You will be able to install Deb packages. Now, the command might change or something down the line, but if it's available on Debian, I cannot see Ubuntu breaking that and not letting you install things that are on Debian on Ubuntu in at least a similar fashion. So I don't think we have to worry about Deb packages disappearing anytime soon. I think that's actually quite foolish, I will say. Okay, this is the one, unfortunately, where... do not use your real email address. I encourage everyone always use a throwaway garbage or a second or third email address. Okay. And I say that with this link being at training.lennoxfoundation.org. And I say that because we all get spam, except if you're John C. Dvorak. Nobody wants it. We all get bacon in our inbox, which is something that we halfway signed up for, but we really don't want in our inbox. And really, that's really disparaging because we shouldn't use the term bacon, because if you don't want bacon, there's something wrong with you. But you have to sign up for this, okay? Use a third email address, create a new one, just use it for this and then never use it again. But this is a good book, okay? This is the free ebook, How to Prepare for a Linux Sysadmin Job Interview. Now, I don't say that because of my personal experience with being involved with Linux Sysadmin Job Interviews. I say this is good just looking at it and knowing this is being offered by the Linux Foundation, the number one place on the internet that probably would love it if you could become a Linux admin, because it just propagates their whole software. So I think that's actually really cool, really interesting. I would highly encourage people, if you can, check it out. I'm going to bring up one more Raspberry Pi related link, and it's because I would love to get one of these and just verify it will work on the Banana series, but I cannot afford that right now. Okay. It's quote unquote official, is the headline for it. The eagerly and anticipated Raspberry Pi display. Now, this is not a high DPI. This is not a high resolution. We're not connecting this to a alpha quantum computer from the future. We're connecting this to a Raspberry Pi, okay? Don't expect 4K display, okay? It's $60, number one, people. And it's only, I want to say, 6 inches. It is 24-bit parallel interface. That's a little bit low, I will say that. But it is touchscreen. I always want to say 10-point touch, which kind of shocks me. Okay, it's RGB 800 by 480 at 60 FERPS, as Ben would say, or Red Linux Gamecast. 60 frames a second, 800 by 480, 24-bit color, 70-degree viewing angle. I highly encourage people, if you want to do a quote-unquote one-off project on your Raspberry Pi, this is cool. If you want to use it as a test display, that's cool. If you want to turn it into some kind of portable, handheld, tablet-like computer, it's cool. Don't get it if you think you're going to be running higher-end games or anything like that off of it, because you're not. That's not what this is for. This is the first iteration, the first version of this Raspberry Pi screen. But it's $60. I personally think it's really cool, and I would love to play with one. That's not going to happen right now. That's the last link I'm going to bring right now. I will say, one of the reasons I can't afford it is I am going to OLF this year. OLF is October, 3rd, 4th, and 5th, Columbus, Ohio. I'm going to go. Tracy Holtz, I know, is going to be there. A couple of guys from the Linux Link Tech Show are going to be there as well. It should be a good time. It's going to be good people. I am going to give another talk. Right now, I believe my talk is called Professional Podcasting. I'm pretty sure my talk is going to be an almost step-by-step on using QTractor, completely free and open-source software, to actually post-produce my audio and get it to a high-quality, low-bitrate audio file. I highly encourage you, if you're anywhere in the area to OLF, please come out. I swear to you it's going to be a good time. I swear to you it's going to be good people. I also swear to you, I'll buy you a drink, a beer, a soda, a water. I'll buy you something. Even though I'm completely antisocial, even though I really get uncomfortable around people that I don't know, I really do love enjoying meeting people that are like-minded. If you're a listener to this show and you like Linux at all, and you like tinkering, and you like playing, and you like figuring out, and you like getting things done, all I'm asking is that if you're in the area, just say hi. Let me shake your hand at least. Because honestly, it's a thrill for me to meet more like-minded people. If you can, hang out. We'll get a group of us, go over to North Market or someplace, get something to eat, go into a talk or two, have some fun. just partake in the festivities and the events. And again, that is October 3rd, 4th, and 5th, Columbus, Ohio. I really hope to see everyone there. Okay, I will say this broadcast is again using OBS and Jitsi Meet. Okay, OBS multi-platform, free open source Libra, open broadcasting software, easy way to stream to services like Twitch, Ustream, YouTube, all these things. Easy to set up multiple scenes so you can show windows of other applications, full screen of other applications, audio inputs from multiple sources, multiple webcam inputs if you want, or you can even do all that and just re-record locally, upload later. Jitsi Meet is what I use to connect with Kodi or to this OBS box in order to have my video and audio go around and go to Kodi and back, kind of thing. Two really good technologies. One is on GitHub using completely free open source software, and Jitsi Meet is using WebRTC, which if you have not heard by now, it is literally the future of the internet. We also like to thank Jonathan Nadeau and all of his work, and like to thank Larry Bushy over at goinglinux.com. Larry, I literally salute you. You're a hell of a guy. I want to thank them both for all their work they're putting on to the Sonar operating system, distro of Linux, which with its only goal is to support as many types of people with as many types of disabilities as it possibly can. Whether the user is blind, partial sight, colorblind, dyslexia, paraplegic, Jonathan and that crew is trying to do everything in their power to make that distro work for as many people as possible. And if you want to find out more information, if you go to the Accessible Computing Foundation, that's where they're trying to organize more and bigger things in the realm of accessibility. If you'd like to send us a voicemail, we have not had one of them forever. All you gotta do is call 707-6-POD-NUT. Leave us a voicemail. We love voicemails. I would literally love to have a voicemail a week to play. Just good for interaction purposes. If you'd like to send the show an email, send the email to podcast@linuxfortherestofus.com. If you want it to be heard on air. If you want to email me directly, not for the show, mail at podnuts.com. If you want to email Kodi directly, not for the show, Kodi@podnuts.com. And as always, I want to thank everyone who supports us by going to podnuts.com/Amazon. And if you haven't heard, Android App Addicts is trying to do a Patreon. We want to see if we can make a fully funded show long-term without ever having to go to a single sponsor. Also, we have a new host on that show. Steve C. had to move on. He wants to get more into his music. And honestly, he did not want to be distracted at all or slowed down whatsoever by having to come out and talk about Android apps and post-produce a Android show when his heart was really more into music. So Mark Cockrell over from Element Opie has came over. If you haven't heard Mark before, I'm just going to pretend that you're lying. ElementOpie.com, a huge archive of a range of different shows. Right now, his current live ongoing show is Everyday Linux with Mark, Seth, and Chris. It's the Linux podcast, not about Linux, but about life in the context of Linux. I think I might have got right. I don't know. But he's the host now for Android App Addicts. I cannot tip my hat enough to him in thanking him for helping continue that show on. I want to thank everyone for downloading. I want to thank everyone for subscribing. Last but not least, if you can go to iTunes and leave us a review, that would literally be fantastic. And I want to wish everyone a good week, and I will talk to everyone soon.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.